Thank you very much, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I would like to thank Batory Foundation for this invitation to take part in this conference, and I do really hope that today we will do maybe one small step to solve all these misunderstandings and problems that have accumulated in this sphere of EU-Russian gas relationship. I'll try to start on my presentation. Okay, so just to start, I would like to say that there is a very strange and probably mysterious relationship between Russia, European Union, and gas. If you look at this slide, you can see that from one hand, Russian gas constitutes 27% of all European gas consumption. But from the other hand, these incomes from gas exports, they provide for about 25% of Russian export revenues. So you can see that here is a sort of interdependence, very strong interdependence. And it started more than 40 years ago in 1968 when Russia Soviet Union started to export gas to Western Europe. And looking back into this 40 years, we can see that there was really a very good balance between interests of both parties, and both parties benefited from this cooperation. At that time, energy security or security of this relationship, they were guaranteed by three aspects. First of all, security of supply, it was guaranteed by state investments in the Soviet Union. Yes, it was a state program every time, by long-term contracts, we will speak about them separately, and by state guarantees of the contracts. Actually, all the contracts, they were concluded on the state level, not between the companies. On the demand side, this security of demand, which we are speaking so much during the last years, again, guarantees of demand, they were provided by long-term intergovernmental agreements, and actually it was the best guarantee of the return of the investments for the producer. And security of transit, it was not really an issue because all CIS countries, they were part of the Soviet Union, and Eastern Europe, it was a part of this Eastern Bloc, so actually no problems could arise with the transit at that time. So the situation seemed to be rather stable, and it really worked very well, and export volumes, they were growing very fast, as you remember. Next slide, please. But what is going on during the last, let's say, 18 years? The situation has changed dramatically on both sides, not only in Russia with the end of the Soviet Union, with the creation of new independent states, with all these transit problems becoming really very, very important issue, but also in the European Union with market liberalization, with the changing institutional structure of the market, and with a completely different attitude towards long-term contracts, which are regarded now as a market failure, not as an instrument which is very important for the gas industry. And moreover, this European policy on gas supply diversification, which is really understandable, we in Russia, we can see the reasons for this policy, but nevertheless, it hampers all this development of the relationship between Europe and Russia. And of course, these alternative energy sources, these movement towards more strong investments in energy saving and renewables, all these creates very, very uncertain picture of the future European gas demand. And again, all this stability, all this security of gas demand, which was very well guaranteed in the past, now it becomes really very, very difficult to predict. And on the Russian side, there are also several challenges, several uncertainties. First of all, it is growing domestic demand. In the beginning of this century, it exceeded all the previous projections made even in the Energy Strategy 2003. 2 years later, domestic demand has exceeded all the projections for 2010. And again, this idea, this Russian idea, which is also very understandable, to diversify export markets, it causes a very uncertain situation for European customers. And all these changes in the institutional structure of Russian gas industry, this, let's call it, private state partnership, it seems to be very complicated and difficult to understand for the European partners. So plus all transit problems, they really became very, very difficult because of this new policy of the Russian Federation to stop subsidizing CIS countries with very cheap gas. So as you see, this picture, it is, I think, the best illustration of the current situation. It is very unpredictable and very unstable. There is no balance at the moment. Next slide, please. I suppose that most people in this auditory are, first of all, from political sciences, so I suppose you know this security dilemma. It's very famous. The best example is Cold War, when countries trying to increase their energy security actually create this vicious circle, investing more and more in weapons and creating more and more instability and insecurity. So you can see here from the all these movements from the European side, from Russian side. I will not read it. I suppose you all know the situation, but it's really going as a spiral development. And for me, as for independent expert, it's obvious that during the last 5-8 years, the situation is getting worse and worse. So all these contradictions and misunderstandings, they multiply. And it happens disregarding these huge investment needs, this very objective factor which exists despite all politicians, investment need in gas industry, upstream development and downstream development as well. So I would say that really situation is very complicated and difficult. Next slide. First of all, a short view from the Russian side on this problem. For us, looking at the European market, we see that unpredictability of demand is really a huge challenge. I like this graph very much. It shows how European projections of their own, of your own demand are changing. As you see, in 2000-2001, projections were about 130 BCM higher than now. The reasons, first of all, high energy prices. Of course, there is price elasticity of demand, and demand is getting it is not growing, increasing as fast as it used to do when gas was really cheap. Secondly, it is this political decisions to increase energy saving and the share of renewables, all these 2020 decisions. So, as you see, during 6 years, projections of European demand, they have decreased by 100 with something BCM. In this situation, for the Russian side, thinking about huge investments in Yamal, Shtokman development, it is very difficult just psychologically to start moving in this process if they don't have any guarantees of these investment returns. And actually, I would like to say that the new Russian gas, the situation with the costs of Russian gas, it's very different from the previous. Historically, Russian gas was the cheapest in Europe, as you remember. But now, with these new fields very complicated in Arctic offshore, and actually Yamal, I usually call it offshore production as well, because of this Yamal Peninsula in the springtime it is 80% covered with water. So it's permafrost, and it's really very, very technologically difficult. So these new projects, they will be extremely expensive. And this new Russian gas, it will be the marginal gas on the European market, the most expensive gas in the world, actually. So having this situation with marginal gas supplies, marginal from the price point of view, and with a very uncertain demand, we understand that Russian gas will be the first one to be squeezed from the market if demand is not as high as projected before. Actually, we faced such a situation in Turkey. You remember this story of Blue Stream, when too many contracts were concluded by the Turkish side, and so finally Russian gas turned out to be not necessary for the consumers, and Turkish side actually has refused from this contract. It was very complicated from the contractual point of view, but the result was that the pipeline, which was already built, it stayed utilized for several years. So all these investments, they were frozen. Yeah, and of course we don't want to face the same situation again. So the next slide. It's just a slide showing this change of gas consumption in the focuses of gas consumption and power generation. As you know, power generation, it was the main sector which provided for gas consumption growth, not only in the European Union, but in the whole world. And now with high gas prices, this inter-fuel competition with coal, with nuclear, it is really changing. So again, it explains somehow this change in the gas consumption forecast. Next slide, please. So what do we get? Here, to prepare this table, I've used materials of the European Commission of the Observatoire Méditerranéen de l'Énergie. So European institutions, it's not Russian projections, but just look. What is the result? What is the call on Russian gas? It is growing, of course, but the growth is very, very moderate. European Union would prefer to depend on the other gas suppliers, not on Russia. And so this incremental demand for Russian gas, it's really very modest. I remember that in 2002-2004, we were usually speaking about 220-240 BCM of Russian gas exports to Europe in 2020. Here you can see that real demand for Russian gas would be about 180-190 maximum. So that is the situation, how we can see it from Russia, depending on the European forecasts and analysis. And of course, it poses many questions. For gas industry, you know that it is very capital intensive, there is a very long lag between investments and the time of the first gas production. So in this industry, long-term contracts are actually the only real guarantee of investment returns, especially if you are dealing not with small fields, but with huge fields in remote areas. And looking at the existing long-term contracts, we can say that in 2015, Russia is obliged by these contracts to supply to Europe only 165 BCM, something like that. So contracted volumes are 165 for 2015. And of course, there is no doubt that Russia can provide these volumes, because now it is exporting 160. So you see, when people are asking me if Russia can fulfill its contract obligations, of course it can. Surely, just 5 BCM of additional gas supplies, it's not a challenge for the Russian gas industry. Moreover, during last year, Russian gas suppliers had to reduce their production because there was no demand from Europe. there was actually a reduction of demand from the European suppliers because it was a warm winter. It is understandable, but Russia had to reduce production by 8 BCM. And those of you who know the technology in gas industry, you can understand that it's really very difficult and very harmful for the wells to reduce gas production. So this small increase in contracted volumes, it's not a challenge at all. The question is that usually people speaking about Russian inability to satisfy European gas demand are speaking not about contracted volumes. They are speaking about all European additional demand. And in this case, the question arises, what is this European gas demand for Russian gas? Yes, and here I think it is the main point of misunderstanding. Russia is speaking about contracted volumes and its obligations, and European Union and International Energy Agency as well are usually speaking about Russian ability to cover all incremental European demand. Of course, first of all, Russia doesn't have such a goal to cover, to satisfy all this incremental demand. And secondly, as I've shown, European Union itself cannot define what is the volume of this demand. So the only real possibility to solve this misunderstanding are contracts, long-term contracts. Of course, they can be defined in a different way. You know that now price formulas, duration, and all these conditions, they are changing in many contracts. Sometimes a linkage to the spot market price appear. So these contracts, they can be different. But anyway, without these contracts, it's really very difficult to say if Russia can cover European demand or not. So now let's turn to the Russian side. Yeah, this sound. What is with Russian gas production? As you know, these three giants, these most famous fields of Urengoy, Yamburg, and Medvezhye in Nandym-Purtas area, it is Western Siberia, they are now in declining phase of production. And you can see that production is really decreasing rather fast. But nevertheless, people speaking about these big three usually forget that there are many layers in these fields. And for example, Urengoy, which is usually regarded as a field with declining production, it has 5 trillion cubic meters of reserves left. It is more than Algeria. Just one field, which is in operation starting from 1970 or something like that. So even those fields, actually, they've never... actually, Gazprom and in the Soviet time, Russian gas ministry, were never investing in brownfield management. Usually the approach was rather barbarian, just to come to produce the most easy gas and to move to the other field with the cheap gas. But now, actually, the company is changing its approach, and they've started to invest in this brownfield management to rehabilitate these existing fields, and I'm sure that it will give these good results, and that declining rates, they will not be as fast as they were, for example, during the last decade. Another group of fields which can cover this decline in production at the traditional fields, it is Ob and Taz Bay and Bolshekhetskaya Depression. These two areas are located not far from Nadym-Purtas area. Actually, they are a little bit north from Nadym-Purtas. I've forgotten to put a map, sorry. So, they do not demand huge investments in infrastructure development, and they have rather good reserves. And I would like to stress that Bolshekhetskaya Depression, it belongs to the independent gas producers. It's not Gazprom. So they can somehow cover this decline. And of course, as you can see, this yellow color, Yamal, famous Yamal. Everybody is speaking about Yamal for the last 30 years, I don't know, 20 years at least. And of course, it's a very, very difficult new area. But those movements of Gazprom, which we can observe during the last 2 years, they prove that now the decision was taken and investments are going in real infrastructure development. And therefore, it seems reasonable that production in Yamal will start. And as you know, though being very, very difficult from technological point of view, this peninsula can provide enormous volumes of production in the future, up to 300 BCM, but it's nearly in 2030. What else? European part of Russia. First of all, the new additional gas production will come from the Caspian region, and again, it's primarily independent gas producers, Lukoil, first of all, and from the famous Shtokman field in Barents Sea. And you know again that this new company, operational company, was created with the participation of Total and Norwegian companies, and which is now preparing to start production in this field. And I'm sure that with this participation of foreign company, they will overcome all these technological difficulties of Arctic offshore development. On the top of the graph, you can see these production volumes in the Eastern Siberia and Far East. I suppose they are not interesting for the European consumers because it's a different resource base and it cannot be used for the European part of Russia or for European supplies. But nevertheless, it shows that Russian production gas production volumes are supposed to increase. Next slide. And what is more important, there are enough investments to provide this growth. Here you can see the development of Gazprom investments in production, and you can see a huge increase in these volumes. For the next year, it's going to be over $30 billion, and for the next decades, until 2020, it will be not less than $35 billion in constant 2007 dollars. Annual investments. And I think you understand that it's really an enormous sum, and it is enough. All our calculations on the financial and production model of gas industry, it shows that it is more than enough to provide for such volumes of gas production, even taking into account all this cost inflation in oil and gas industry. Next slide, please. Concerning Russian domestic demand, I will not take a long time speaking about it. There are many speculation about unlimited demand growth, but the main reason for us to estimate domestic demand at about 540 billion cubic meters in 2020 is this decision of the Russian government dated November 2006 to increase the level of domestic gas prices to the NABEC parity with European prices on the German border. So, of course, it will affect the volumes of demand, first of all, in the power generation, where competition with coal and nuclear will be rather strong. So, we suppose that domestic demand growth will develop like this. And therefore, having production and domestic demand, we can see the export possibilities. Next slide. Here they are. I didn't put the numbers, but here in 2020, Russian possibilities, export possibilities to Europe, they are about 210 BCM. Remember, European coal and Russian gas, 180-190. So Russian export possibilities, they do actually exceed European demand for this gas. And as you can see, all this diversification of gas supply, anyway, it is just a marginal diversification, and the main part of Russian gas exports will be still going to the European Union and to Europe. Next slide, please. I will not stop on the pipelines. It is the next session, I suppose. And here, the last slide. Again, speaking about new balance, which we want to reach, I am sure that both Russia and European Union are interested in a stable and balanced relationship between each other. I suppose that, first of all, we have to look at our real pragmatic goals, as in any deal. For European Union is to guarantee necessary supply volumes. For Russia, it's to guarantee sales and investment returns. And actually, I understand that it is a sort of economic regress and return to the barter relationship. But in this situation of mistrust, probably it's the only decision. I'm speaking about swaps of assets. Of course, it is really very rude possibility to guarantee fulfillment of obligations. But if both parties mistrust each other so much as they do now, probably these guarantees, not but by money, not by contracts, but by assets, it's the only possibility to start doing business and to stop talking. So I suppose that this example of Nord Stream with these swaps of assets, with the guarantees of assets, and with the whole gas chain building from production to transportation and to downstream, it's an example of a working mechanism in the relationship between Russia and EU. Probably we will find some other guarantees, maybe some insurance of long-term contracts or whatever, but still as the whole institutional structure of gas market, both in Russia and in EU, has changed. Now, from the economical point of view, it's a strong need to create new contracts, new relationship between our parties.